Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And this is Take Two.
Take Two. Take Two. We didn't make it that far, maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah, usually I was talking about how I'm tired, Corey, mm-hmm. and to underscore that fact, I just forgot to press record. I won't, if you want to hear what I was talking about being tired, reach out into the ether, find that wherever it was.
Somewhere.
Work's busy. Corey, how are you doing?
I'm great. Spring is here. You know, I cut the grass the other day, which is honestly, I really enjoy. It's very therapeutic. Heat on my skin, taking my dog on a walk at 7:30. It's nice. It's good. It feels great. Been playing a lot of games too, and I'm very excited to talk about them.
Love it. It is daylight savings happens, regardless of how you feel about just the mm-hmm. concept. It is nice having a little bit more daylight. So yeah. I also did a little bit of grass cutting. We don't have a ton of grass currently since we moved and it was a new build and we were establishing grass last fall and not all of it's up, but tried to get out there and cut what was there just to kind of let it spread a little bit. Give it the chance to start growing up again.
Give it room to grow. Yeah.
Right. It's feels nice out. Excited. We're still staying in playing games. We'll never break that no matter how nice the weather is. Corey, we're talking about games today. Mm-hmm. Not only that, we're also talking about news. We're also talking about, there are some reviews have dropped. You mentioned previously the embargo's not up, but Dragon's Dogma 2 is at least previewing really well.
Very well.
It's hard to find some stuff, but yeah, since we started recording, found a VG247 article that says, title, after 3 hours of Dragon's Dogma 2, I'm convinced it's not just GOTY contender, it may be an all-time great.
Mm-hmm.
So people are liking it.
From what I've seen, most people have had about 3 hours with it. I've seen, mm-hmm. I think IGN had it. They've had it. A YouTube channel I follow, PlayStation Access, they've had it and they were talking about it and they were hyping up and it's very sounds like Monster Hunter crossed with Elden Ring. Is kind of a lot of the impression I'm getting. You obviously have your pawns, you're kind of venturing through this world, but it's a very organic world. There isn't a big, large map that has all these different icons of where you can go. This thing's here, this thing's here, this thing's here. Go check it out. It's more of a, as you wander through a village, this woman talks about their missing daughter, went down to the river and hasn't been seen since. And people have been looking for her. And so then you can go down to the river if you want, or you can just say, that's not for me. And whatever happens will happen. The world kind of moves on with or without you.
Yeah.
So I really like that. I'm very excited for it.
Yeah. The preview footage so far. Yeah. IGN had some footage from earlier in February. It does give off some Elden Ring energy. Obviously, stuff that I've seen from the original Dragon's Dogma has some of that too.
Oh, yeah.
There's comparisons that people have to obviously Elden Ring, but also a little bit of Breath of the Wild, just in the same kind of exploratory aspect. Mm-hmm. So excited. I'm a little scared just because it's another big game.
It is. I want to stress this to you and to listeners as well. I won't be picking that up day one because the front half of this year is wonderfully very just front loaded. And so I've really been looking at this year. I'm like, okay, nothing as of what we know is really coming out after July 1st.
Yeah.
There's going to be your annual games that are going to come out. So I'm like, let's just spread this out. You know, get Dragon's Dogma 2, Rise of the Ronin, which also is previewing decently well, it seems. Yep. It's getting a lot of Assassin's Creed 2 mixed with Ghost of Tsushima, mixed with a little bit of Dark Souls. It is the big three I've seen jumbled together. That's a lot going mm-hmm. on there. But it seems to be doing well. We have those. Yep. We have Stellar Blade, which we need to talk about their debacle from this past week. Whenever we get the chance.
Yeah, I saw something. I haven't looked into it too much.
Effectively, they mistakenly dropped a demo for it and quickly realized they weren't supposed to and quite literally just bricked it on everyone's console, which is like kind of funny, but also terrifying that they can just brick a game on your console. So it's cool media. We'll get into that. But there's also Elden Ring DLC, and then I still want to get to Persona 3 Reloaded. A lot of games mm-hmm. coming. And so I'm like, let's just parse these out throughout the year because none of these are small games.
Mm-hmm.
At least from what we know of Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2, they're going to be very lengthy. There's not a ton on Stellar Blade, but I'd be shocked if it wasn't. I'd be shocked if it was less than like 15, 20 hours. So a lot of big games. So I'm just going to be parsing them out instead of trying to stress and fit them all in. So
it's a good call. For context, this week finished up Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth.
Yeah.
finally kind of wrapped up. I mean, finished quote unquote in the sense that like I got done what I wanted to get done. And my end hour count was like 92 hours. So,
Checks
out. is a beefy boy. Some reviews for Unicorn Overlord game. Yeah. Game you checked out. Game that in response to the reviews, I immediately downloaded a demo because like, I'm kind of digging this now. But I'm not going to go out and buy it just yet because I don't. I mean, I'm sure I'll like it, but also, too, I want to play a little bit
mm-hmm.
without having the guilt of buying a whole game that I'm not going to play right away.
Mm-hmm.
People are talking about it being, you know, again, for context, this is same company that made it's Vanillaware. They made 13th Sentinel.
13 Sentinels, Aegis Rim.
Yeah. Most recently, which was like a very like goaty contender for a lot of people who played it whenever it came out. And even this, people are like, no, this is their best game. Like, this is just, it's so good. Like, people are loving it. They're talking about it being like incredibly unique, despite being weirdly like basic just the fact that it's like, oh, it's a, you know, it's a prince who's just trying to retake his kingdom, and it's like a, you know, it's basic fantasy stuff, but it's still like so unique in how it's presenting everything, and people are just really excited about it. So yeah, 8.5s, nines, who would have thought?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's going on.
Yep.
We're in that season. Totally agree. Just got to kind of parse it out. Just going to kind of go at our own pace. There's also like some pretty solid small little games too. I don't know that it's for me, but I have considered just for the sake of being able to talk about it. Pacific Drive
Has
also been getting like people have different opinions on, but it's a roguelike game where you're driving your station wagon around the Pacific Northwest, and seems pretty cool. People like it. So plus I got to play Helldivers.
You do need to play Helldivers.
Still haven't played that. So a lot of stuff, Corey. But yeah, let's jump into news.
Let's talk about more stuff that's coming.
More stuff that's coming, yeah. The day that our episode released last week, Xbox had a partner showcase where they actually previewed some cool stuff. Corey, you watched it. As it was happening, or pretty soon during.
I watched it after, but I didn't get to watch it live, but yeah, right after.
I also watched it, I think, later that evening. Few things stood out to me. I'll let you take the one that you kind of pitched me on that also really caught my attention, but couple additional ones that looked really cool. Capcom showed a game, Kenitsugami, Path of the Goddess, which I think had been shown before. I had heard that when it was initially shown, people thought it was like a new Onimusha game. And it had been a while since then, so I don't know. I can't remember if it was like just a teaser trailer or what, but I've heard people describe it as like, oh, it kind of is Fortnite save the world mode, but with Japanese mythology.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, the original pitch for Fortnite being, oh yeah, you build up your base and then at night the zombies come and you have to build it up in such a way that you can like repel them back. And it's the same kind of thing where you're running around and you're recruiting your villagers and you're like, you're really building up this town to protect your goddess, maiden, whoever it is, from all of these otherworldly monsters. And it's got a lot of, I think they describe it as a stylish or an action strategy game, I think is what they called it. But it has like the third person action style, but also has what looks like almost kind of a real-time strategy kind of stuff going on. So that looked kind of cool. There was also some Persona 3 expansion pass, additional content kind of missing, which from not some of the stuff that some people were kind of bummed was missing, like the female protagonist and some of those, but some additional content that I guess gives hope that maybe they'll actually add on some of these things rather than just creating a Persona 3 Reload Royale, Super Enhanced Edition. Yeah. so that's kind of cool. The Sleight of Hand looked pretty cool.
Yes.
Who was it made by? Riff Raff Games. Don't know what they've done. But it was a trailer, but the concept, it reminded me of something like a Dishonored, or something like a, most recently Neon White, I think in concept, like in style, something like Dishonored, very painterly, very stylistic. You play as a witch. It's a stealth game where you're playing as a witch and it has a very like hard-boiled noir detective vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And you're using a cursed deck of cards to I guess do something. I don't know.
It looks like the impression I got from it was that you'll be using your deck. I almost see it as like a John Wick Hex kind of a game. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Where like you'll use the deck cards. This is going to get you this far. This is going to let you take on this like enemy. This is kind of, it's all a, so this is all speculation because it's all just like a CGI trailer, but judging by like this premise that they're trying to introduce, that feels like the style of game might not be exactly in that, but I feel like that's what they're trying to put down. I'm very into that because I did like John Wick X.
And I think I heard on a podcast, somebody talking about it, and it did like really pique my interest in this way, is that it seems like kind of a perfect option for the stealth genre. Because thinking of something like Neon White, where you are moving around and you're using these cards that you find and you have to traverse using them, like granted Neon White is very linear and it's designed to be speedrun and like optimized, but like you are at the whims of the cards that you were given, and you have to traverse using those. Something with the stealth genre, like in one of the things that Dishonored or Hitman or whatever is, Hitman maybe less so, but like Dishonored especially can be a little rough with, if you look at it from that perspective, is like it's pretty easy to just kind of like get in a lane where it's like, I only use these two gadgets and I only do this kind of strategy and I never adapt. And I only look for ways to go about it this one way. Well, if you're given a randomly generated deck of cards that determine what abilities you have and whatnot, like you have to adapt and you have to kind of like figure out on the fly, okay, this is what I have. I have to figure out how to make this happen with this small set of tools that I have. And I think that that's pretty cool too, just given, you know, some of the limitations that that puts on the play. Mm-hmm. Again, similar to something like Hitman, where, you know, you are limited in very specific ways of, you can tackle things a number of different ways, but there are challenges that make it to where you are limited in how you can go about these certain things and you have to get creative with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's Frostpunk 2, a couple other things in there that were kind of cool. Creatures of Ava, which had kind of like a reverse Power World kind of energy where it's like big open, a lot of animals, but you're hugging them instead. So cool with that. But yeah, I totally agreed whenever you sent it to me. The game that stood out the most was The Altars.
Yes.
Tell us about it, Corey.
So The Altars seems to be taking up a similar idea to The Martian, where you are, instead of being a proclaimed botanist and like very, very knowledgeable, I believe they said that you were just like a maintenance member of the ship. You are the last one standing after some storm. It puts you on this planet. The concept of it is you come across this like you come across this new, it'd be on the periodic table. What's it called?
I think they call it Rapidium.
Rapidium? Yeah. Something like that. Where he can, the main character, I can't remember his name, but he effectively can use that. And he makes a copy of himself, but how it somehow works through space and time, and it creates a copy of himself if he had taken a different choice in his life. And so what that version of him would be. So had he gone to college, here is that version of him that like pans out there. And then they spread that out. And so I'll get into a little bit of it. What you are doing is you're working through this planet trying to avoid, I believe it was either like the storm or the sun that's going to effectively fry your ship. So you're constantly working against like time, and your goal is to get this ship up and running again so you can escape. And so again, you are creating and finding more Rapidium to create different versions of yourself. Here's this guy who went to college that ended up marrying this woman. They've lived a happy life. Here's the one that did go to college, married this one that got divorced. Here's what he is now. Here's the guy that decided to play baseball when he was 9, so on and so forth. And they all have their own, each of these alter versions of yourself, each has their own goals, ambitions, and ideas once you bring them on. They have all their own storylines, and they are constantly either working with you or maybe even working against your main guy and like his goals and ideas of how to get everything back up and running. I think this concept of it is so unique, and not for a video game. And not only is it unique, it's what every single person has probably ever asked themselves as well. Is like, what would my life look like had I just done this little bit of differently? I think that having that be your main premise is so enticing and so fun, and look to me above and away the most appealing of all the games just because of this idea. It will be on Xbox. It's also going to be on PlayStation. PlayStation released a trailer for it. I don't know if it'd be on Steam. I would assume it would be. Feels likely, unlikely to be on Switch because it looked graphically like fairly beefy.
Yeah. And that is the interesting thing with it is like, you know, a lesser game, I think, would make it to where you create these copies of yourself and they just act as like monkeys, effectively. Mm-hmm. They're just there here's doing my smart guy. Service. Right. They are just there to fill a role and to get the number higher so that you can make this happen. But it looks like they really are leaning into the fact that it's like, oh no, these are all like, they just like you are the protagonist of your story. These are all people who believe themselves to be protagonists of yes. their own story.
Mm-hmm.
They have stuff going on and they have opinions about it. And they're going to tell you their opinion. They're going to, like, you know, you got divorced. He didn't. He's going to tell you, like, that you're non-committal. That yeah. you just, like, may, and maybe something like, why should I believe you? You mm-hmm. didn't, you can't stick it out. Like, you, why should I listen? Like, and so it seems like they really are leaning into a relationship level mm-hmm. aspect where it's like, they want it to have like a level of conflict beyond just like, oh, you're racing against time. You are trying to manage a diverse group of people who, yeah, all happen to be you, but they are their own people with their own wants and needs. And they at this point are effectively just a group of tons of different people. It is, ironically, like, given the fact that Frostpunk 2 was shown, it is made by some of the same people that made Frostpunk,
mm-hmm.
Which is a, I've never played, but I've always been interested in. It's a very, like, kind of dark and somber management, like, kind of city management thing, survival city management, like crossing something like a, like a city skylines, but with a, you know, with a don't starve or something,
right. yeah.
like something where you are trying to survive and you are, and that is an active element in those games where you are trying to, you're having to negotiate these problems where it's like, okay, we need more heat to live out this winter. And the only two options that I have is I can throw this kid in the fire. Or I can make everybody work 3 hours longer, for the next like 2 months, every day. Mm-hmm. And like, what am I going to do? What's going to be the right option here? And I think like it's, if they are bringing that level of like, thought to it, I think it's going to be a really just interesting, complex thing. That I'm really excited to see.
Yeah, it was just the most appealing, most interesting, and felt like the most ambitious of all the ones that they showed off. Not that the other ones aren't. I'm all the ones that you brought up, I was equally excited about, but the Alters, I don't know. It's just that question of like, we've all had that thought, and them to bring it to the game, to the console world. I think it's be very fun. So
yeah.
Exciting.
Very excited. Very interested. On the less exciting note, Corey, bad news from previous week. Actually, bad news from a couple of weeks ago, but broke news this last week. Akira Toriyama.
Mm-hmm.
Famed legendary artist, author of numerous things, Dragon Ball being his like primary claim to fame, but in the video game world, had strong artistic influence over like the Dragon Quest series, Chrono Trigger, numerous other games like Blue Dragon, the soon coming mm-hmm. Sandlands, things mm-hmm. like that. He passed away, mm-hmm. and like seemed like rather, I'm not sure how unexpectedly. It wasn't something that, like, you know, I feel like sometimes you hear that people are kind of going through it, and seemed like this was more sudden than probably people were aware of. But yeah, passed away in his, I guess, was it late 60s, late 50s?
I think it was something. 68.
Yeah. So yeah, really, really sad. Seeing, you know, it's admittedly, like, I'm not super up on Dragon Ball anymore. Just I mean, love Dragon Ball Z to death. Grew up with it. Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z both. When Dragon Ball Super came out, and it was a lot of the same, just continuing to just kind of go up in power, and it just kind of it not really being anything new. I was like, I'm not missing a ton by not watching. You know, I've watched the entire run of Dragon Ball Z. Like, you know, I'm not missing a ton with it. So I'm not super up on some of the most recent Dragon Ball stuff. And so admittedly, I'm not the biggest super fan, but like, it's a weird thing whenever somebody that like I feel like is very influential across multiple mediums passes away. And just like, you know, obviously it's a terrible thing just as a person. But it's also like, it's going to be such a terrible thing across, you know, manga and anime and video games and just all of these different mediums. Corey, are you a big Dragon Ball fan?
I would say I am. It hit me in a weird way when I saw the news, because I grew up watching Dragon Ball Z with my dad specifically. When I was really young, my dad worked night shift. And so he would come home and sleep most of the morning while my mom went to work. But like at that point, I've been fed. I would like sleep in, hang out with him, and we would watch Dragon Ball on a Cartoon Network. And like those memories are just like perfection in my eyes. And he would joke all the time, like when he was driving, not dangerously fast, he didn't like endanger me or anything, but we lived in a very rural area. So he would drive probably like 55 miles an hour down the road. When I was a kid, I thought it was so fast. Be like, look, he would say, look, we're Super Saiyans. Look how fast we're going. And it's just like in this like old beat up like F-150. And it's just very, those memories for me are like very precious and I guess innocent.
Yeah.
And I always look back on them with like not even rose like tinted glasses, just like very fondly. And so having all of that and like watching all of it with him, and I own multiple seasons on DVD. My dad still watches them. He's the one who sent me the post that he had passed away.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just, you know, it kind of hits really like this person that I have never met, would never have met under really any circumstance at all, to have like such an impact on the dynamic with my dad. I don't know. It was very sad. And like, it is a tragedy to lose someone who has meant so much to so many people. I mean, literally, I thought it was a meme, but like apparently some of the cartels in South America like held a ceasefire in his name because of how much he meant to them. There's people at the Real Madrid game in Spain that are wearing a Super Saiyan like wigs with the Saiyan like a power level scanner over their eyes. Going to games. It's like he has made a monstrous impact for so many people, but for me, like the impact he had was like this fun and special relationship I have with my dad. Yep. And it's very sad to lose someone like that. He is a titan in the industry and in across multiple industries, and he will not be forgotten.
It's one of those things too, where I feel like people who have never like watched an anime, or have like never knowingly watched an anime, still can recognize Dragon Ball Z characters. Like, no, they can recognize Goku. They can just because like it is just kind of, even in America, is very, it's just kind of here. Like people, it's a widespread thing that people can get into, in a similar way that like Star Wars is, or, you know, there are people who just kind of from all over. That's super cool that you have that memory. I never, I mean, other than friends growing up, like there was nobody in my family that loved Dragon Ball. The big thing for me, like the big memories always had to do with, you know, coming home from school and it being, you know, Toonami always had that like 5 to 7 block when we were kids where it was like, that's where Dragon Ball came on. Dragon Ball Z, usually Yu Yu Hakusho came on, Rurouni Kenshin.
Oh, yeah.
They had like a really solid anime block in there. And that's where like, when I got a little bit older, I started like actually getting the VHS tapes at the time, DVDs later, like Dragon Ball Z, kind of episodes and movies and everything. But like, that was the core way that I took it in. And yeah, I mean, Dragon Ball Z was like that and Pokemon, I feel like were two of the biggest influences growing up for like wanting to be an artist at different points where I was like, the art styles were so striking and so, in my mind, were so unique that I just could not get enough. It was like, I love it. It was so influential to me wanting to be like a creative and everything. It's beautiful that people are just, you know, if nothing else, that people are really showing a lot of like, pride and solidarity through a whole, you know, all of the level of influence that Toriyama's had across different, you know, wherever they come from, wherever they've like experienced him, whether it is Dragon Ball or it is Dragon Quest or it is, you know, whatever else that they're taking the time to kind of just get excited about him. I'm sad. Also makes me wonder, I mean, just out of pure curiosity, what something like a Dragon Quest looks like in 10 years, you know, like, what does Dragon Ball look like? I mean, obviously all of this stuff is adapted from manga and everything, but still, you know, I mean, how does all of that influence evolve over time? And, Toriyama, super, everything that I heard about him too, just people loved him. Mm-hmm. So going to be missed. I want to get the, if nothing else, the Dragon Ball manga now, or maybe a Kid Goku figure. Ooh. Just to put on my shelf. I looked one up the other day and it was like $12 and I was like, I might get this, but it was like $500 shipping. I was like, I might not get it.
Hey, this is, you want this? It's very rare, very special. It's $12. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll do the $500.
So I might find something. Who knows? I did see one of Kid, because as I've gotten older, like I do hold more, even though I, like whenever I was growing up, I always loved Dragon Ball Z more. Like, I think I hold Dragon Ball in like higher esteem. I think because of that, where it was like Dragon Ball Z at its core was kind of just a, you know, tiered scaling of power where it was like, you know, it's fight scene. And then it's like, you know, Hero gets beat down, but then overcomes and becomes more powerful. And then there's a stronger guy who like beats him down until he becomes more powerful. Yeah. And Dragon Ball, like, had a little bit more other stuff going on, kind of like early Dragon Ball Z in a way. And so like, that's something that looking back, like just whenever I'm thinking, oh, do I want to go re-experience this? I'm like, oh, I want to go re-experience Dragon Ball because they're just, you know, it feels like a more diverse storyline to me. I want to collect some of those things and kind of relive it a little bit.
Do it.
Yeah, do I it. Might. Not for $500, but yeah.
Do it.
Cool. Corey, let's move on to what we've been playing. I will lead us off because I don't have a ton. But I do have a couple of things. For one, like I said, finished Infinite Wealth. Game finishes super strong. I will say, at least in my memory, I think I do prefer the wrap up to Like a Dragon, Yakuza 7. Mm-hmm. I think just that whole, not to spoil that, but like that whole arc, Ichiban's whole arc there, yeah. I think is just a little stronger. But the game ends super well. And you know, Kiryu's whole arc throughout it. I mean, I was not expecting for Kiryu to effectively seem like the protagonist.
Yeah.
Not like you kind of just assume, oh, he's going to be there, but not so in certain terms, like he is the second protagonist, if not kind of the main protagonist of the game. Like in a way, it is a game about him and mm-hmm. his memories and everything. And it's very much a game about Ichiban too. But like watching him go through it and watching him kind of face his demons and overcome himself throughout all of this kind of stuff and just relive these old memories, I think is just super cool. Really enjoyed it. All of the extra side content, super cool. Did all of his Memoirs of a Dragon, which if you haven't played the game, is just kind of like, it's additional little like vignettes that kind of vary in length that really do. I mean, they show like, you know, just small memories of mm-hmm. random characters from all of the Yakuza games. And like, even the ones where it was like, I don't really recognize who this guy is. Like, you know, it still felt impactful and meaningful because it's all happening. And, you know, you're getting the context. You're mm-hmm. seeing, okay, like I kind of get where this person would fit into this whole thing. And yeah, all of that was super cool. I plan on next hopping into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Unicorn Overlord. Mm-hmm. So that'll be next on my plate. However, I did sit next to my daughter
yeah.
while she played mm-hmm. Princess Peach Showtime,
I love
the
this.
Demo.
Yeah.
I think like Shadow Drops. The game comes out a couple of weeks.
I think early April.
I feel like it's sooner.
Let's it might see. Be.
Princess Peach Showtime. Well, that's not right. Is that right? It says March 6th.
That's not right. Well, that was last week.
Yeah.
That might have been when the demo came out.
Maybe that's when the demo came out. Releases, March 22nd, like everything else.
Like everything else right now.
Demo came out, I guess, on the 6th. And it is, so it's Peach's first, I guess, Peach game in like 20 years, basically.
That's shocking.
She had a Super Princess Peach game on the Nintendo DS, which I don't think was like incredibly well reviewed, but it was kind of her own. It was meant to be like her own little platformer. And I think probably loop in younger girls, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, has not had a proper Princess Peach game in many years. And so this is kind of that thing. In it, the beginning of the demo, she gets an invitation to go to this like big show. It's like, you know, they're performing. It's this big, maybe kind of like a concert hall, but just kind of this big auditorium with multiple stages, and just it's this huge production. People are super excited. They're going. There are all these shows to see, and whenever they get there, I can't remember the name of the character, but this like dark lady pops up out of nowhere and is just like, I'm gonna stop the show now and lock everybody inside. And so like Princess Peach effectively is the de facto, like, I have to save the day because this, you know, ghostly monster has come through and decided to shut the show down. They want to be, I guess they want to be the star now. Mm. They don't want people performing. They want to be the only, they want to be the only one who's performing here. And so Peach now has to, you know, go between these different shows and, you know, save the actors, save the story, save like all of this kind of stuff. And so during the demo, you get a little taste of a couple of those. There's a like kingdom, knight kind of musketeer storyline where you play as sword fighter Peach. And then there is a, baking festival storyline where you play as Baker Peach, patissier, I think.
Okay.
Peach. And you're effectively like going through these different scenes. Like the stage will be built out with a certain set, and you'll go through it and you'll do whatever it's supposed to be, like rescue these guys, fight these guys, whatever. And then as you like go through this door, you go off stage, it'll transition to the next set, and you're effectively like completing this scene. You only play a couple of them, like one as the sword fighter Peach, one as the baker Peach, but the way that it's structured and some of the like video that it shows, it seems like each of the costumes and sets have multiple stages to them. Okay. Because like the sword fighter one, you finish and it says like, it basically says like level one. Is kind of how it phrases it. So it gives it a sense of like, oh, well, there'll probably be a level two Swordfighter Peach and there'll be a level three Swordfighter Peach and whatever. Same thing for the Baker Peach. The interesting thing is that like they play very differently. So like Swordfighter Peach is very much a like a combat kind of thing. Okay. Like it's not a Devil May Cry. It's not like you're
I would hope not.
But it's a simple, like, you know, my daughter was playing it. She's just kind of like slashing, but it does have this like parry mechanic almost that they do like for the boss. Like you are required to have like some level of being able to pull it off where it's like basically it's not a hard thing, but like whenever the person's coming to attack you, you can press the attack and Peach will effectively like kind of deflect, like parry or riposte, whatever you would call it. Mm-hmm. And you know, scoot around behind them and kind of open up for that. So there's a little bit of nuance to it. And then the Baker Peach, her whole thing is kind of like a Cooking Mama video game in a way. If you've ever played Cooking Mama.
I have not.
Okay. Ruby has also played a lot of Cooking Mama.
Okay.
So I'm this familiar with Cooking Mama. it's basically like cooking dishes. So in this, you're like having to, you know, we gotta make cookies. We gotta whisk this bowl. Come on, we gotta go. And then but you can't whisk it too much or it'll blow up. So you gotta get to the perfect thing, and then you gotta load it on the carts so that they can carry it off to the festival. You're also decorating a cake at one point. You gotta follow this kind of pattern.
Where it blows up.
It doesn't blow up. It just doesn't turn out right.
So okay, gotta, that's good. There we go.
You gotta keep that. Also, just back up for a second. The main villain, her name is Grape. Her name is Grape, and her group are called the Sour Bunch.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
The Raisins.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's so a couple of notes. Like, I think the game that it reminded me the most of, just in graphical style, and some of the way that it was presented reminded me of Luigi's Mansion 3.
Okay.
Most recently.
Oh, okay.
There's kind of just something about the camera perspective, something about like the way that it runs. Cause it did run, I don't know if it's a demo thing. It did run a little like frames didn't seem like super solid, which, to be fair, like Luigi's Mansion 3 was kind of like that, where it was running. It wasn't like the most, it didn't seem like the most stable all of the time, which was not like a huge deal, but it reminded me of that because it also did some of those things. But yeah, the game has, at least from what I could tell, I mean, at least like 8 to 10 different Princess Peach, like,
okay,
sets. There's a, like, there's a Ninja Peach, there's a Mermaid Peach, there's a Superhero Peach, and all of them are supposed to have their own gameplay mechanics. Like, Ninja Peach is supposed to be like a stealth game. Mighty Peach, at least looking at the video, almost looks like a side-scrolling, like, shoot 'em up, in a way. And so it's like, they're really kind of diversifying it in a lot of different ways. And I don't, like, I'm here for it. Like, yeah, you know, them doing just a, trying a bunch of different things, I think is kind of cool. Ruby seemed like she really had fun with it. I, good, looking at it, like, whenever I was watching it, I was like, I don't know that I would love playing this. Like, I think I would have fun playing it. I don't think I would be like, I don't think I would like choose to like, yeah, this be my game of choice. Like, this is the game that I'm playing. But like, she really enjoyed it. And, just in general, like, presentation, concept, seems super cool. So, super about that. Comes out the same day as everything else. Couple of weeks. So, get excited.
What we need is for you to have a voice memo of Ruby giving her review of Princess Peach Showtime and just slide that in. Because I want to hear it. Because I think it'd be really good.
Yeah, I need to. I did ask, like, whenever I was like, hey, so this demo dropped, I downloaded it. Do you want to play it? I was like, you got to give me a review once you're done with it. And I asked her, like, whenever she was done, I was like, so what did you think? She was like, it was good.
It was good.
She was like, it was good.
That's all you need.
Yeah. And then the next day she was like, is the Princess Peach game out? And I was like, not yet.
Here's your beer every day till.
but I will let you know whenever it is. So yeah, Princess Peach Showtime. Get excited.
I am excited.
Yeah, it's again, looks super cool. All about it. Nintendo Switch not lighting up. They also announced recently, the new Paper Mario Thousand Year Door remaster comes out in May.
Yeah, that's exciting.
So that's got at least a little bit of life left in the Switch coming down the pipe.
Just a wee bit. Yeah. Just more remakes and remasters.
Yeah, but, you know, can't get enough.
No.
What can I say?
We'll slide into a little bit of what I've been playing.
Yeah.
I'm still playing Final Fantasy Rebirth. Okay. It's still amazing. It's incredible. And so I looked at the chapter list because I like knowing where it's at. I'm about halfway through the game. I'm on chapter 7. Okay. And there, I have some thoughts, to go into a little bit of my complaints of the texture and like texture pop-ins and a little bit of the, like world, how it was, loading. It seems they have fixed that. I don't know when the update came out or if one came out or just if later in the game it's better. But since leaving the grasslands, which is the original area, which is kind of also the most like, so far, like plants and forest dense, I would say at times.
Yeah.
It hasn't been an issue. But the game has gone also a lot more linear since then, which I think works far more in its favor. There's a pretty extended like linear sequence that I really, really, really enjoyed where it's just so character focused. So much of the party and their interaction is like the main theme there. Yuffie is brought in actually really, really early into the game, but doesn't actually join your party until about where I'm at now. I just got her. And more on Yuffie later. Good things to come. But there's just so much more dynamic going on. I think I said before, Aerith and Tifa's relationship is so much more of like friends, if not like sisters at times. And that's just so much more appealing to watch play out than they're like in the original, like almost like odd jealous, like rivalry of Cloud at times. Mm-hmm. I really like the route that they've taken here. Cloud and Barrett seem a little bit more softer to each other. Red 13 is still that dude. It's good. It's going great. I did spend like hours playing Queen's Blood.
Okay.
Because it is exceptional. They're in one of those chapters that you're kind of on a boat in between two of the regions, and they're doing a giant Queen's Blood tournament on the boat. And your boy went through it all, and I won. And it gets really tough. Really, really tough.
So you beat all of Queen's Blood?
I've beaten this part of it. There's definitely going to be more.
Okay.
There wasn't any. I need to go back to see. Because where it drops off, I don't know if there's any Queen's Blood in. Because I've wrapped up Costa del Sol area, which is full of magnificent mini games. I don't remember any Queen's Blood there, though. Now I need to go back and check. But still, sorry. It's going great. The story is still like captivating. Knowing how the original plays out, some of the dialogue is like gut punching at times. Mm-hmm. You're just sitting here like, oh my, like you are foreshadowing this from a mile away. I know how this goes, but the beauty of it is that you don't really know how it goes this time around.
Okay.
Hopefully. And so it's keeping you on your toes. They've changed up some story things, added some things in there that makes you like really squint. Like, okay, what are we doing right now? I'm very excited to talk to you about it once you start it up, because quite early on, you're going to text me and be like, what's going on? And I'm going to tell you, I still don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
So all that being said, I just picked up Yuffie. And it is a game changer for me. Don't want to get too into spoilers or anything. I'm going to just talk a little bit about combat, and then we'll move on, because I don't want to really spoil the game for people. But Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth, they've kept a very similar combat system that I really like. The main four party members of Cloud, Barrett, Tifa, and Aerith, all serve I was texting you about this earlier, serve a very distinct function within when playing, and they feel like they fit their niche very well. As you're doing combat, it feels, I think I used the word stiff earlier, but in a good way, like in a way where it's like, okay, every, like you still do your regular attacks and then you build up your ATB meter to do abilities, but it feels slightly slow in a way to keep the idea of the turn-based alive. That's how it feels to me, and that feels their intention with it, and I really like it. So you're doing all this, and it feels really good. They've introduced Red 13, who's a bit quicker. He is a quadrupedal party member, and so he just functions and works differently, and it feels quicker in that regard because, well, he's got an extra set of legs on the ground. It feels like he's going to be like your quick striker. Attacker alongside Tifa with... he has like a vengeance mode and all these other things that he can do. It's really neat. But then they bring Yuffie in. So I never played Intergrade. I never got to experience how she is. This young woman is an absolute unit, a tank, a monster on the battlefield, because where all these other characters have like a very designed, like fixed role, Cloud is your like upfront tank doing, he doesn't do a ton of damage really. But he can embolden himself with later spells and stuff that do make him a bit more of a powerhouse, but he's there to soak damage, counterattack, and go into his Punisher mode, which then does actually a lot of damage. You have Barrett, your ranged fighter, shooting from a distance. Aerith, effectively like your cleric party healer, but can do damage from a distance. And Tifa, again, like a quick striker, doesn't do a ton of damage, but can do a lot of damage really, really quick. Yuffie is all of these things at the same time. We'll throw her, we'll attack, do like this backstep throw her shuriken, change the elemental type of damage she wants to do, and then get back in there and unleash elemental damage and then teleport back to her shuriken and do it. It's the amount, the way she plays, it's also so fast. It doesn't have that stiffness to it. She moves like just a snake. It's so fluid. There's no like, there's no moment where I'm like, okay, I'm finishing a combo. Let me move to my guard or like dodge to get back. It's just like all out assault all the time. You're dodging effortlessly and getting right back into it. It is a revelation of how the combat can be. And it's just so good to play. I don't know if I'll ever not have her in my party going forward, which is awful because there's only three people a party. And I'm looking at Cloud like, I know you're the lead, buddy, but you might be on the sidelines for a bit because I need Yuffie. I'm a huge Barret guy and Aerith is your best magic user. I'm like, this might be my three. I might rotate people from there. But it's, her introduction is phenomenal. I hate that it's like kind of halfway-ish through the game, maybe a little bit under into the party, but so good. It is night and day, like how they've built and utilize her skills to how the others are in a great way. No one's bad by any means, but it's just, it kind of puts in perspective of like how it can be. I kind of want to change it to 60 frames per second just to see how that even works instead of the quality mode. So TBD on that.
She was that was my biggest takeaway from Intergrade or Intermission
DLC. Intergrade.
How great it was to play her. I agree. Like, even though I really enjoyed Remake's combat, like there can be some waiting with Cloud and stuff, and like as you get further on, you have a wider skill set, not as much, especially as you're kind of like switching between characters. But with Yuffie, it was like there was a lot of utility being packed into just a very small package.
Yep.
And she's going, and she can, and I hoped that they would kind of like maybe moves a little bit of that also over, but I guess, if nothing else, I'm glad they didn't get rid of it with Yuffie. So she can still play as like a very kinetic,
That's a great word for it.
Character. Yeah. I try.
You did well there. I'd say Red 13 is close to that. I'm interested to see how Cade Sith down the line operates as well. Because we still know Vincent and Sid, while we'll join the party, will not be active party members to play. So we'll see. And also, I am on chapter 7, but knowing that those three characters right there are still to come, I'm like, there's still, I bet the 7 chapters are only like a third of the game. I think there's still a lot more to come. I'm really enjoying it. I think the open world stuff is still not great. I don't know if my opinion's going to change on that. I still do it when I come across it, but I'm no longer in the grass, how I was in the grasslands trying to accomplish it all. It feels like once you've seen and done it there, you've kind of seen it all, which is sad. But again, I kind of talked about how that was last week with such an ambitious project to maybe lose a little bit of the sight there, but still, all the mini games great, Queen's Blood great, like I just said, combat great, and the story remains captivating as ever, and so I'm loving it. To continue on with my point earlier of how I'm not going to be picking up all the major games as they're coming out, just because I want to play games through. I will continue to keep bringing new games to the podcast, just smaller games that I've missed out on over the past couple of years that I want to look at. And so due to our Balatro craze, which I've still been playing, I've beaten it 3 times now, which isn't anything compared to you breaking the game on multiple occasions, Chris.
I unfortunately haven't like hit like some of that like high level goodness, but there have been a couple of times where it's like I'm pushing, 10 million points on a blind that only requires me to have like 10,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm definitely like starting, but you know, then again, I'll go on to the next one and I'll lose before I get to the first boss. Like, you know, it's all over the place. Who knows? But it's having fun with it. I am tuned in at this point. I'm gonna break it.
I believe you are.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah, I've beaten it with the green, yellow, and blue deck at this point. I think with the yellow deck, which just gives you more money. I had a run going, and I think at this point in the game too, because as the more you play Volitra, the more jokers you unlock, which are like the big money items, and more decks you unlock. You can kind of get, I think, halfway through most rounds at this point, as long as you pick up like a half, even like a bad joker, really. It's more of how do you like change up how you're playing about halfway through to really get it going. And that's what happened to me. I kind of had like a hand where I'm like, this just isn't going to work. And it finally fell all into place quite quickly. Yeah. And I was racking up like 1 to 1.5 million like every turn, no matter what, off of just like two pair every time. And I had a run earlier that I collapsed at the very, very end because the final boss blind was your hand's level is halved. And I'd built up pair to level 14.
Yep.
And it crashed it to 7 and got demolished. But I was cooking with grease with that one.
Yeah.
All this to say, Balatro is still, it's so fun. I don't see myself stopping playing this anytime soon. But because everyone has been saying this is the one of the best deck building roguelikes in years. The only one that like everyone was comparing it to Slay the Spire effectively. So I'm like, I've never played Slay the Spire. Let's check it out. And so that's what I've done. I picked it up on a Steam Deck and I have played through like 3-4 runs so far.
So you haven't beaten it yet. That's what you were about to say.
Okay. I have not beaten Slay the Spire yet. I'm still kind of learning some of the nuances of it at this point. It's just whenever I feel like you jump into a roguelike that has, you know, consumable items, a deck builder one as well, where it has like these ideas of weaknesses, vulnerable, exhaust, these cards don't do anything, XYZ, you're kind of just learning a lot of the lingo as you go. And so it's taking me a little bit, but I've made it out of the first level every time. It's usually like I kind of run into a buzzsaw around the city, which is level 2. I've only been playing with the initial like fighter one because I saw that they had levels. I'm like, well, I want to let's build this up to see what this looks like. I think I'm getting a little ahead of myself here because I'm talking about Slay the Spire as if everyone listening knows what Slay the Spire is. And I feel like majority of people do. I'm the one who's late on this. But Slay the Spire is a deck building roguelike where you work your way up. Effectively kind of it reminded me of an inscription immediately, but a map, where it shows, okay, this is an enemy. Here's a treasure chest. Here's a campfire. Here's a question mark. You don't know what's going to be there. And you kind of choose your path as you go. And when you do combat, you, draw cards. One is a block card. So you're adding 5 to your shield. So it's going to negate 5 damage that your enemy's going to do if they do an attack. You do a slash, which does like 6 damage and so on and so forth. There's other things where there's a card that you can play that will do damage equal to the shield that you've built up that round. Cards require energy. You only have 3 energy points your first round, 4 your second round. I assume it built as you go. And there's ways to increase it regardless. Yeah. But you're effectively trying to get to the top of the spire is my assumption. And yeah, it's lived up to the hype immediately. After one round, I'm like, I get it. Because you're going through, you're upgrading your cards, you're building, you're kind of developing. It's a deck builder. You're building out in this roguelike, like different ideas. And so my most recent one was a heavy shield build, like blocking build. And I eventually kind of ran out of steam I couldn't do enough damage with the amount that I was trying to negate over time. I was losing those shield cards, and then I couldn't do enough damage to bring them down when they weren't attacking, because your enemies will show what they're going to do that round. And so it's going to show, here's this cleaver. It's going to do 10 times 2. You're taking 20 damage. I'm like, that's a lot of damage. Yep. And the card I drew was one block card, which is 5. I'm like, well, I'm taking 15 damage no matter what. That's going to hurt. All this is to say, it's so good. It's very fun. I'm excited to keep playing it because I understand the hype. It's very fun. I want to beat it because you can see the initial probabilities early on of like, okay, here are the cards I'm getting. This is what's going to be working, so on and so forth. And yeah, it's great. I'm playing it on Steam Deck. I know it's on mobile and on other places. It's on Game Pass. It was like $4 on Steam. I'm like, yeah, that's worth it.
It is I've probably put total maybe like 50, 60 hours into it.
I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. We mentioned it whenever we were talking about Balatro in the first place. Like, it takes a little bit more doing to get into it. Maybe for people who are not super familiar with games of this type, just because like it's effectively telling you a brand new language. Like, you have to understand. Like, it's not just, oh, I'm playing king and queen, and I'm playing like a pair and a flush and whatever. Like, you are trying to fight enemies using these cards, and so you have to kind of like have a little bit of a grasp of some of those things. And there is also, you're not just trying to get points, but you are, like you said, you're trying to not die. You're trying to block damage, to do damage, and so you're trying to figure out the nuances with this. But in a really similar way to Balatro, I mean, it is, because it is a game that it is a roguelike, you are building it up at the beginning of every run. You know, you are kind of at the whim of partially like your, you know, the class that you choose. So, I mean, if you choose a warrior, you know, you kind of know what you're getting, especially the more you play and you unlock new cards and whatever. Like, same thing with the thief, same thing with the defects. Like, you kind of get a sense, but you are kind of at the whim of like, okay, well, now I have, like with the warrior, maybe you have like a really shield heavy deck and that's really like, you can really lean into that. Or maybe you drew a bunch of cards that are like really damage, like self damaging, like berserker type stuff. So you're trying to lean into that. You're like, okay, I need to be, I will be able to do more damage if I'm hurting myself. So let me try to like optimize that and max it. And it does get into, I think some of the like really partially like some of the most just like nail biting plays are those ones where it's like, oh man, if I don't draw this card, I'm done. Like, I cannot survive this round unless I like debuff him, like make him do less damage to me, or like unless I can do this amount of damage this turn to end him. But it's also one of those things where it does have the other end, similar to Balatro, where it's like, you know, the level of like brokenness that you can get to, where it's like, oh, you can chain so many of these things together, where it's like, okay, you know, the thief, you know, I've got like a poison build with the thief, and I inflict like an additional thing, a poison on them whenever I take damage. So they're gonna hit me 10 times or whatever. And I just debuffed them down to where each time that they hit me, it does 0 damage. So I'm gonna take 0 damage, but I'm gonna inflict like 20 things of poison on it. You know, like just things like that, where it's like, you know, you start like fine-tuning it to where you're like, I'm taking 0 damage, but I'm like one-shotting these guys, and I'm just like breezing through these towers. Not because you all of a sudden have this advantage you didn't have before, just you're figuring out like, okay, I'm really tuning in, knowing what I need to do, what like little artifacts I need to have to kind of boost my like damage output and whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really just super cool, finely tuned little thing. And they also like continue to have some new content for it. They have a new class that came out a little while back that I've played a little bit of because like their core, they had like a core three classes that's the, and the fourth class plays very differently. So yeah, I mean, they've added like similar to Bellatro, just a lot of replayability, a lot of just interesting stuff that you can do if you really want to dig in and play a lot. So
yeah, and I will be playing a lot. And so we'll see if I keep bringing it back with the podcast. But there's only so much I think I can talk about it till I think I get much farther in. I'll be bouncing between that and Bellatro because it's just both the games are so much of that one more run like mm-hmm. mindset of like, yep. let me just try this one more time and see what happens. Yeah. And on top of that, I have been playing more Helldivers 2 and it still remains supreme, super Earth forever.
Love it.
Yeah. And so that's about all for me this week. Yeah.
Love it. Corey. Yeah, I'm excited because next week I will finally have some Rebirth opinions. Mm-hmm. I'll plan to play some Unicorn Overlord. Definitely during, I mean, I have zero expectations that Rebirth is going to take me even half of the time that Infinite Wealth took me.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely not going to be wrapped up in it as long, but so I do plan on trying to, like you, try to sneak in a little few little smaller games here and there to have a little extra stuff, but very excited to kind of dive in and share some additional thoughts with that stuff. Corey, you got anything else today?
No, not today. I don't know what we'll be bringing next week. Could be more Slay the Spire. It will likely be just something random that I've been delaying for a while. So look forward to that.
Yeah. Corey, where can people find you on the internet? If they want to find you on the internet.
If they want to find me on the internet, the best place would be Instagram at hash.slingin.thrasher. Yeah, that's probably going to be your best chance. You?
I don't know. Nowhere, I guess.
Perfect.
Still, yeah. Who should they follow, Corey?
They should go follow the Dragon Ball page or Sandlands is coming out. Follow their page. I can't remember who's making the game. I would assume it's the same people who make Dragon Quest. Because
I think, is it level? Yes. Is it level 5?
I think it's level 5.
Okay. Okay. So Bandai Namco at least has some hand in it. Not level 5.
That's so Bandai Namco.
Yeah, publisher is Bandai Namco. Developer is ILCA. Who are known for most recently One Piece Odyssey.
Oh. That
turn-based one. Pokemon Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl.
Okay.
So not nothing. Yeah, so they've done a couple of things. Pretty cool. Excited about it. Yeah, follow them on Instagram. I'm sure they got something. I don't know where their Instagram is. Yeah, Corey, I'm excited about next week. Can't wait to hear your continuing saga with Slay the Spire and share my new saga whenever it comes to Rebirth. But until then, Corey, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too
Super Saiyan Scratch?
What?